Thanks for listening to season 4 of the Utah Real Estate Podcast.
The most downloaded series in the whole state and possibly the world.
Hello, I'm Steph Scholl here with the one and only Silver Dollar Man.
Also known as Scott Stevenson. This year, we are consulting with community leaders about the future of the Beehive State.
And how you can best secure a house for your home.
Join the thousands.
And my mom.
That subscribe every Thursday for the most exciting hour of the week.
Stephanie, as we look forward to the future of the Beehive State, one of the concerns with the increased population is transportation. So what are we going to do about that, Stephanie?
Okay, I'm really excited about this, Scott. So we have Elizabeth McMillan, and she is the communications director at the Utah Department of Transportation, or as we know, UDOT.
UDOT.
So Elizabeth and I were talking about some of the questions during prep meeting, and I was like, is this nerdy that I'm excited about transportation?
And I said, yeah, it is, but I like to nerd out about this too.
But the reason we want to talk about this is that really, transportation affects housing. Like,
it affects happiness.
It's really fun to think about, okay, what is the future? And you guys are really looking at this and taking a hard look.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I work for Carlos Braceres. He's the executive director at UDOT. He has been there. He will be so happy I'm saying this. He has been there since the year I was born.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
That's what Stephanie says about me.
So 25 years.
And I have worked for him since a couple months after he was appointed as the executive director. And he is known internationally as a visionary and just one of the brightest minds in transportation. So to work for someone like that is an incredible opportunity because we really can be creative about what we explore and how technology and also human happiness. I'm so glad you brought that up, but how the human experience relates to transportation. So that's kind of the paradigm shift that we've had during our time with him as our executive director is, yes, we absolutely need to work on traffic and how can we fix problems that come up, like solving problems, but also how can we use the transportation system to maximize and enhance quality of life, which is a little bit different way of coming at transportation.
So does that mean that UDOT can make the Utah drivers a little better? A little better drivers? Is that?
It's funny you say that. So I work on the Zero Fatalities program too. And
you do?
I do, yeah. And on my way here, I was listening to a behavior change book and I've listened to so many of them and read so many of them. And so far the answer is no. I am not successful at all at changing that behavior. I'm sure trying.
Scott puts that in because he's from the East Coast. Yeah, he feels like he's a better driver than the rest
of us. Well, not necessarily.
but maybe.
But possibly. Everybody is so nice here that when they get in the car, that's when they decide they're going to take out their anger, I guess, you know?
Just that latent rage shows up in our little metal bubbles.
Right. So we know we can't solve that problem, but what are the other problems that we can solve?
Solving is a strong word, and things that we can look at are traffic, so trying to improve delays, especially, on the Wasatch Front. I don't need to get into it because you and your listeners know we are just crowding in more and more and we're constrained. So it's not like we've got a lot of area where we can just put in new interstates where we really have to just go down the middle of the Wasatch Front. So that means that whatever we have, we need to optimize the best that we can. So we have a traffic operations center here and it was established right before the Olympics because we knew the one thing we did not want was for traffic or transportation to be the story that went into national and international news. So there was just so much innovation that happened at that time. So our Traffic Operations Center continues to lead the country, even again, the world in traffic operations innovations. And so that's little things that seem either small or annoying, like ramp meters, but looking at little tweaks that we can make in the system so that traffic moves more smoothly. Because once you get one car slowing down even a tiny bit, you see what happens. Everything just backs up. So trying to avoid that.
Okay, so what's ramp meters? I haven't even heard of that.
Oh.
Do you know what ramp meters
the delight
is?
Of ramp meters.
I'm going to say I do, but I don't. Yeah, but, you know, like, so I'll let her explain it.
I won't do the teacher thing. Like, tell us what you think it means, Scott.
Yeah.
Okay. So ramp metering is when you're getting on the freeway at a time of day that's really busy, and then there's a light, a stoplight. So they'll have like a light for each lane, and it will let you on. It meters how many people can get on the freeway at one time so that you don't have everyone trying to get on and then just
that
stop.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, I love that out here.
Do you?
No, I
Tell
do because
more.
back east, they don't have any of that.
No.
They don't. I've never seen that at all until I got here to Utah. And I remember telling my wife, you know, I love this. I love the way they control the traffic that's coming on. Another thing I love.
Tell me all the
Another
things.
Thing that I love, building overpasses.
Oh,
I've never,
yeah.
Those overpasses, you know, now that's an East Coast thing.
Yes.
You know, you see a lot of overpasses. And I've noticed that particularly on Bangor and down I-15 now, particularly around the point of the mountain, they've used a lot of overpasses, which to me are fabulous.
They have been so good. Now, that was one where, because we have an innovative organization that's willing to try new things, we got a design. It had the overpass. And there were some skeptics. That's not how we had been building things. So they looked at the design and said, yeah, I think that that's going to work here. And it worked so well that we ended up changing the direction we were planning for the rest of Bangor to do more overpasses because they are so safe.
Yeah.
Really effective. It helps preserve the feel of the community. So those have been a huge success. And I think a good example of being willing to change directions to do what's right for the community and what's going on.
Isn't that new though? Because
yeah.
I think when I got out here, you know, several years ago, I don't recall that there were these overpass. I remember saying to my wife, I wonder how they could use overpasses here that would make traffic flow a little bit better because I saw it in the east.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they started building them. And I said, oh my gosh, see. I'm way ahead of my time.
She's a self-professed traffic nerd. You are an engineer in hiding.
I like you. You're putting some good terms on for us. I feel like we have so many questions for you, but I think that the biggest one we have is we just did a pro and against the gondola at the Little Comic
Union.
And so Scott and I have been like, do we bring it up? Do we not? But I feel like we would not be responsible podcasters.
That's correct. We did not that question.
So, you know, we've heard that you guys are deciding in April. What do you want to tell us about the gondola?
Well, I would not be a responsible UDOT employee if I told you what's going to happen. But part of that is because I don't know. We still don't know what's going to happen. So we got more than 13,000 comments from the public. And I think that people have the sense that they're just sending something to an institution and it's going to go into a database and nothing's going to happen with it. The truth is that every single comment gets read and gets a response to it. So it's an incredible amount of work and thought that goes into it. Also, I don't know that everyone is aware of this, but the project manager for that project has a passionate love for Little Cottonwood Canyon. Like, it's just, he's up there every day. He lives right near it. And so, and our boss also met his wife at Snowbird. So there's just much love for that canyon and to do the right thing. So what I can tell you is there's a lot of time and effort going into making sure that we get this right. What right ends up being remains to be determined. The other thing I can tell you is that no matter which of the two main options we end up going with, we've also got a set of, I think, 5 or 6 other solutions that will be helpful, and we'll mix and match those with whatever.
Now, did I hear that was hot air balloons out there?
That, who have you been talking to? How do you know these things? Edit that out. That's secret.
I love that. Your quick wit. I'm like, this is
came right back. She came right back at me.
I thought that traffic would be so exciting, but all of a sudden
you get hot air balloons in there.
So, I mean, a big thing is how, as you're looking towards the future, what are you guys' plans for? I mean, right now you're looking at Little Cottonwood and that, okay, something needs to be done right here. What are your plans in other parts of the valley and of the state?
Yeah, so we work with metropolitan planning organizations, and you your listeners may be familiar, but they are groups that are throughout the state. And so there's WFRC, which is the Wasatch Front Regional Council, and then also Mountainland Association of Governments. We work with them, and then there are others throughout the state. Mm-hmm. But especially when we're looking at where the rapid rate of growth is on the Wasatch Front, we work with those two a lot. They do modeling to look at what population growth is expected to be, what that might do to the transportation system. And then from there, we say, okay, where do we have issues? What do we already have planned that we're going to invest in? What do we not have planned that we should? And then that's the basis for concept reports and just the birth of new project ideas. So that's where it starts. Like I said, the Wasatch Front, because it's growing so fast and we're really constrained in what we can build just because of space, we're having to be a little bit more creative with things like overpasses. Yeah. So taking existing roads and saying, okay, how can we make this work better? How can we make it safer without buying up a bunch of land where people live, where there are businesses? Mm-hmm. That's not our goal. We say sometimes you can't build your way out of congestion. I mean, you could, but that's not what we want for Utah. What we want is to have excellent quality of life, and paving over neighborhoods, parks, communities, that's not what we want. So just looking at being smarter and then what facilities we can convert or make them run better. That is the focus right now. And then looking at where we have growth that's maybe not as rapid, but into areas where we have less infrastructure in place, and just trying to get out ahead of that. People sometimes get frustrated that we don't build where we can see that there will be development. And we have that balance, though, of really urgent needs on the Wasatch Front and then future needs, but they may be 10, 15 years out. And then we've got a finite amount of money. So trying to be really conscientious about how we prioritize those taxpayer dollars so that we're taking care of current needs while also planning for the future.
Well, speaking of taxpayer dollars.
Yes.
So who determines how much money you guys get for your slice of the pie?
Yeah, that is a good question. So we get money from federal and state government, and we take a lot less federal money than most other states. Pretty self-sufficient. We're lucky to have a legislature that is forward-thinking and a state that really values self-sufficiency.
Well, is that a positive thing, taking less money from the federal government?
So here's why we do it this way. In addition to just a culture of self-sufficiency, there are often strings attached, is the most straightforward way to say it. So
makes sense.
Yeah. So certain types of roads that you can spend it on, which maybe aren't what we most need to spend it on. If you think about roads in the East Coast, they've got really different issues from what we have here.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then the way that you can spend it, who can be on a project, what type of land you can spend it on. So we use federal money for more of our simple projects to take care of those. And then we use state money so that we can really be creative. Sounds a little scary for government, but that we can be the most efficient about how we spend the money we get.
And I'm staying on this budget thing. We'll get back to some of the other things. But the contracts that go out, I'm assuming those are bids from private contractors for building roads. And those come up for bid, and who makes the decision on who gets those bids? Is that something the public should know about?
Well, sure. It's a very transparent process because, you know, there are potentially hundreds of millions of dollars on the line for any given project. And as you might imagine, those who don't win are very interested in what happened. One thing that Utah is really known for is alternative delivery, is what it's called in the transportation industry. And so traditionally, it's design, bid, build, which means that the design already exists, and then a contractor would bid for it. They say, this is how much we think it costs. And then basically you go with the lowest cost, and then you build it. And so we were the first in the country to do a mega project that was design build. So that means that you've got the contractor and the engineer working on it at the same time so that they can come up with solutions in real time. So you do a best value selection instead. So you say, all right, this is basically the amount of money that we have. How much can you do for the taxpayers of Utah with that amount of money? And you need to fulfill this list of requirements. And that has just been completely game changing. Most other states have followed suit on that, especially on bigger, more complex projects. So it's a really elaborate, time-intensive process. I used to work for a contractor and then an engineering firm, and it's an astonishing amount of work that goes into identifying those best value solutions. And then you'll have, to your point about the actual process,
yeah.
we'll have a panel of selection judges. And so they have expertise in various areas. So, you know, cost estimating, bridges, geotechnical, whatever makes the most sense for the specialists. I'm not going to go through this whole thing. It's very intense. But basically, we look over all of the submittals. We evaluate which one is going to provide the best value. Then we typically have in-person interviews so that we can get more questions answered. We document everything, and then we choose.
That's as quick a way as you could do it. If you go too much longer, people fall asleep with all these processes.
I could feel it. Yeah. I was like, I'm very passionate about project selection. I want to tell everyone how transparent it is, but not everyone loves it as much as I.
I actually have loved hearing that specialized group was formed for the Olympics.
Traffic Operations Center.
Yeah, the Traffic Operations Center.
Yes.
This whole thing with like the budget, how careful you guys are with funds. This project's really on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
How are you helping? What's like the future plan for that?
They each have fairly extensive phased plans. Yeah. Mountain View will continue to be built out in Utah County. So we'll start construction on that next year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the design and environmental phases for that. So that will happen. It'll extend.
What do you mean it'll be built out?
So
I mean,
we'll
I know it ends
building,
in what, like Port of Rockwell?
Yes, exactly.
It ends at Port of Rockwell. You say it's going to go on the other side of Port
continue.
Of Rockwell?
Yep.
It will.
It will continue south.
Right up there past Camp Williams, is
yes.
it? Yep. Camp Williams and into Saratoga Springs.
Down south. Yep. Exactly.
Really?
Yeah. And then also there's more work that will be done. So a little bit similar to Bangor, where we'll come back to what we've built in the west part of Salt Lake Valley and add more lanes. It'll be more like Bangor. It'll be more like an interstate type of road. That's what it will feel like. And so there will be interchanges like what we have on Bangor rather than intersections. And before we are able to do that, we made some commitments to add transit. So train, bus, we've made some commitments there. So before we can continue to do anything on the road, we need to make sure that we're building what we call a multimodal system. So because we are constrained, and it's unlikely we will double deck I-15, anything could happen, but but we're not trying to put in more asphalt. It also means that we need to be building bike lanes and sidewalks that are really usable for people to commute. And then, of course, buses, tracks, front runner, everything. Everybody needs to have options, lots of choices for how to get around that aren't just one person in a car.
So how far south into Utah County is Mountain View Corridor projected, or you haven't come to that point yet?
You'd have to fact check me on this one. I believe it's going to go around Utah County, though, so it'll, it's going to be.
Oh, it's massive.
Big.
Big time.
Yep.
Is this a project that's down the road a number of years or something around the corner?
Yeah, so they're all phased. So my guess would be that we'll do a couple of sections in Utah County. So we'll definitely be doing the one that we're starting right now, this first section in Utah County. And then I think we'll probably come back and add more to the sections that have already been built out in Salt Lake County and then back to Utah County. Some of them may end up being concurrent. It depends.
There's so
on
much building out
funding.
There in right off of Mountain View.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's still so much. Well, I don't want to say there's a ton of land, but there's a ton of places to still build.
Yes, there is plenty. And then, you know, you'll get the infill, like what we're seeing more in Salt Lake Valley.
When is Port of Rockwell, which goes, you know, to down there to intersect with I-15, when are they going to finish that through? You don't know? Or can I ask that?
No, you know what? Because he lives right there. So,
it's been there for, I live in Bluffdale, so, you know, I'm just kind of like, that thing's been sitting there and it's
blocked. We're asking questions for the viewers.
Yeah, I know. I am a viewer. I'm a viewer from Bluffdale.
So I will tell you something funny. So I live up behind Cabela's, so I'm also in that area. And my husband also works for UDOT, and he used to work in the real estate side of things, and probably once a month we drive past it and he, you know, recollects when he helped with that acquisition. And he's like, when are they going to build that? So I don't know.
We don't know.
Inquiring minds want to know. Yeah, I can get back to you with an answer on that.
Next podcast.
I'm unhelpful on project dates.
Well, but I think of like the as you're talking about everything, I'm like, it's a lot to even keep straight. And you don't want to be like, Scott, it will be done by June.
And no, I would be like, I don't know, sometime in the next year.
Well, probably, there's a lot more building on roads and whatnot on the west side, right, than the east side, because the east side's older and, you know, or are you still doing stuff on the east side?
We are still doing stuff on the east side. And we took a moment to just evaluate how much we were spending in each area. There is so much need in the southwest quadrant of the Salt Lake Valley that there has really just been like a cry for help.
Yeah.
And so we took a look to just say, you know, it feels like we're doing a lot in that area, but maybe we should take a look and just see how much we're spending. And we are spending a lot on the west side. And it's because it's needed there. So yes, we are spending proportionately more.
Over on
the west, well, and especially the southwest part of the valley. And I mean, you live there, you know, there is still a need for more.
Yeah. And I think that it's cool talking about transportation, how like with these there's phases, but that you guys are going to include bus and you're going to get more of, is it tracks or front runner or just all of the.
Yeah. So I should also clarify that the Utah Transit Authority, UTA, is a different organization, agency.
See, I didn't realize that.
A lot of people don't. Mm-hmm. And so for that reason, as the person who keeps track of our public opinion surveys, it behooves us that UTA does really well, too, because people think we're the same. But we're lucky. They are really great partners, and they're great to work with. So they are the ones who run tracks, most of the buses, like all the UTA buses, so on the Wasatch Front, and then Front Runner is UTA.
Okay.
But we are working with them on that because you can't have buses without roads, and Front Runner needs to be right by where roads are that people can park their cars. So, yeah, it's a pretty hand-in-hand operation there.
Well, I got to give you guys a compliment.
Oh, I like you. Tell me things you like.
I'll tell you, the point of the mountain was a nightmare for I don't know how long it was, long before I got here. But I got to tell you.
Is that why you didn't move here?
Yeah, I was holding out. I was holding out the whole time back east. I kept saying, if they finish that point of the mountain out there. But no, in the last number of years, I mean, they just did a superb job around the point. I mean, you're driving there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like a mess every time. I never wanted to go around. I never even wanted to go on I-15 south there because it was just such a mess. But it has been done so well. Every time I drive on it, these guys know what they're doing. I mean, honestly, have done a fabulous job there.
I love to hear that. You know, I went to college in Utah County and I lived in Salt Lake. And so I would drive down several times a month. And I also remember I was older than 25. It's been a bit. But I just remember thinking, because it was under construction, I remember thinking, is this ever going to be done? And then I finished college. I got a job by the point of the mountain.
You had four kids.
I still live there. Had my 30th anniversary. No, but I live there now. And so when I drive on it now, it's the same thing that you said. I just really appreciate how great it is to drive on now, even though it was
a mess for a while.
Long journey to get to where we are.
A long journey, but it was well worth it.
It's pretty good now.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than going on a long journey and get disappointed.
Oh, my goodness,
And that has not been the case there.
Well, thank you. I'm very glad to hear it.
Very nicely done.
Thanks for joining us. Yeah. The adventure.
So we've been talking a lot about more Salt Lake Valley, but are there projects that you guys have in plan for other parts of the state?
For other parts of the state? Yeah. So, I mean, Southern Utah, too, is growing so fast, so we're doing a lot there. And then also, we've been calling them recreational hotspots, which is what it sounds like, but also just means places like Zion, where we get a lot of backup. Looking at anywhere, and then Little Cottonwood Canyon, also Big Cottonwood Canyon, anywhere where we get so much traffic that you start hearing people say, I don't want to go there anymore, or this isn't what Utah used to be like 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Those are the types of places that we're looking at. Solutions that we can implement that don't change you wanting to go there. I mean, it's really throughout the state. We have the most trucks, commercial trucks, on our roads out of any state in the country.
Really?
At any given time, about 25% of traffic on the interstates is truck traffic, so commercial trucks. So, I mean, we are the crossroads of the West, and that was true of rail, and that's true of roads. And so we have a lot of routes where even if it's outside of the city, it's really, really important to the economy for us and for the country that they be in good condition. And that's an ongoing effort. And then we've got areas north and south that are growing really quickly that need more infrastructure. Yes, that is like not a very specific answer, but for a state that's growing the way that we are, that just is the answer. We've got things everywhere.
This has been pretty interesting, Stephanie.
I know, and it sort of makes me proud of Utah. That I mean, because we just did an episode about the pro and against inland port.
Oh.
But I didn't realize that we have the most trucks going through, which after that episode I should have, but when you gave that stat, I was like, whoa, it's sort of cool, all the things that we have going on in Utah.
I mentioned that we do public opinion mm-hmm. surveys, and it's not, you know, for vanity. We really want to understand what we could be doing better for our customers, our users. Mm-hmm. But one thing that is very consistent is that if we ask in focus groups about whether people think that we're innovative, it is like scoffing, like, no, Utah is not innovative. And every time I'm like, can we go around the glass and just explain to them that we really are respected as innovators and leaders in this industry? So for everyone listening, just definitively, like, we are bosses here in Utah.
I love being on that platform. Tell us the, like, really, what are some things that, how you said that people look at us? Like, why?
Partly because of our legislature. I mean, that's just a fact that they have been really, like I said, they have had foresight knowing that infrastructure was going to be really important for our economy and for our growth. So they've treated it that way. They've funded it that way. They've put laws in place that make it so we have the flexibility to do what we need to do, but also help us stay focused on what's really going to get the highest return on investment. Mm-hmm. So is that we've had really great leadership at the Department of Transportation. One thing that's unique in Utah is that we've had really great continuity of leadership. So people who have been at UDOT for more than 25 years, and in other states, because they are positions appointed by governors in a lot of states, like it is here, you'll have a new governor come in and then they'll put in a friend who doesn't necessarily understand the transportation industry that well, and just a lot of turnover. Having someone with institutional knowledge who knows and loves transportation has really been a benefit to us. And we just have really smart people who love working at UDOT. I mean, that is something that you'll hear, is that the state may not be super competitive on pay, but as far as offering a job where you're making a positive impact on your community, transportation might not be the first thing you think of, but it is absolutely true. And our employees love their jobs and just want to help. So they stick around and they have good ideas.
Now, let me get some clarity from what you just said. You said other states you were talking about, mm-hmm. I know exactly what you're talking about. You get a Republican governor, a Democratic governor, independent, whatever it may be. And then they appoint their people. So why is it you're saying Utah would be a little bit different that way?
Well, I mean, we've got some pretty good continuity of political party.
Okay, so you got a political party that's a little more consistent, that keeps the people in the same place, which is kind of an interesting thing, because a lot of times we don't, when we see a national change, we don't realize that when you get a change of a party, whatever party it happens to be, a lot of times the party puts in a lot of new people in a lot of these places, and therefore they're new in there. Positions.
Yep.
And you're saying we have a lot of continuity in there.
Yeah. And I mean, Governor Cox, I think, was very clear about his message that he wasn't going to just keep the cabinet, even though it was going to be another Republican governor. And he made a lot of changes. And he did not change having Carlos be the director. And I think that that's because Carlos has also, he is like rabidly committed to transparency and doing the right thing for the right reason. He's also spent a lot of time educating legislators about what we do so that they can make good choices about how to invest money, and has really just built trust with legislators and with our executive branch. And so I think it's an easy choice to keep him, because you know he's going to do what he says he's going to do, and he's going to do the right thing. And so I think that that really contributes to it too.
I mean, I love hearing that, because that's something that I think the general public doesn't really think about. And second of all, it's nice to know that you have some public servants that are dedicated to the public, not to a party.
Yeah. Yep. And he is very much that way. Just, yep.
Yeah.
Passionate.
I love it. One of my favorite things about UDOT is the signs that you guys have. That was really clever.
You mean the little signs?
Yeah, the little signs. Yeah,
you know what my favorite one was?
Please tell me.
One of the ones that I loved the most was one I passed by and it says, "We love the Silver Dollar Man." I don't know how that happened.
He's really just making a pitch for next week.
Right? Exactly. That would make his day.
But no, well, you're in luck. The person that approves them is me. So.
Really? There you go.
I'm really the person who disapproves them. Like, so we have a monthly meeting and everyone gets in the room together and they've got their notepads. Yeah. It's like our sad little version of the like Saturday Night Live writer's room. Everybody's got their notepads and they're sharing ideas, trying to make each other laugh. And I'm just there like waiting to say, "I love my job. I don't want to get fired. That's a no." Or like, that's too far. Dad joke. But yeah, they do come up with some good ones. No, that's a fun meeting.
I've thought several times, hey, thank you to whoever put that up. That gave me a chuckle today, you know?
Okay, so I'm just on a like slightly more serious note. I have a master's of applied positive psychology, mm-hmm. and there was a point in the pandemic when we were just saying, you know, I think we really just need a couple of positive messages and a couple of funny messages. Like, people just need that right now. And so we did a New Year's one last New Year's that was just a very, like, happy, inspirational message. And we got an email about a month later from a woman who said that she was just having a really hard time, like, the darkest mm-hmm. of times. And she saw that message and she decided that she could look ahead. She was going to leave the past in her rearview mirror, like the message said, mm-hmm. and she found a new job, and she reconnected with some family members. I'm like, those are the moments when it's like, okay, I can show up next week. There are people who called us communists for what we put on the signs, too. Like, there's general outrage, lots of cuss words. There's not unanimous love of our signs, is what I'm saying. But if we could change one life or put one smile on one face, then you know, we're doing all right. Hopefully, it helps people think about safety a little, too.
Yeah. I have a friend that she is involved in the Buckle Up.
Oh, yeah.
What is it called again?
Are you talking about Zero Fatalities?
Zero Fatalities. Yeah. So I do appreciate like the reminders too of even like, okay, you don't need a text right now mm-hmm. or slow down or whatever. Because anytime I would like hear her presentation or hear her talk, I would be like, oh my gosh, it's not worth it to speed. It's not worth it to send that text.
Well, my favorite one was it said, "Buckle up, knucklehead."
Was that a real one? That sounds like something that they would come up with and that I would let go.
Sitting in the corner thinking of something
else. I can see you've got like a little paper on your lap. Yeah,
writing down.
You can come to the next meeting. Fine.
I love it. Okay. Got your invitation. No.
Well, hey, so now, what are some big things in the future you can tell us about?
Big things. Okay.
Big, some big, of them big things.
All the secrets.
Slightly speculative.
On the Eternals.
They're going to speed right to this point.
The one I love to talk about, Carlos is probably going to try to rein me in on this, but you guys, it is so exciting that I'm going to talk about it anyway. Okay.
I'm rubbing my hands together right now. You can hear it on.
You ready?
Yes.
Yeah. Drum roll. Yeah.
Yes.
Aerial taxis. So,
really?
Unmanned flying taxis.
No way.
This is true.
Like, no one.
I mean, is this 2089 or what is this?
Like, I'm not committing to dates or centuries here. No, okay, so the FAA is expected to approve the first one for use in 2025. So approved this year
not
for
that
use
long.
In 2025. No,
wow.
Not that long. It sounds a little far out, but it's
I mean,
really
the Jetsons. We're talking about the Jetsons. Mm-hmm. Do you know who the Jetsons were?
What are the Jetsons?
Oh, man.
Just kidding.
I mean, I'm not even going to bring up this kind of cultural stuff from the 70s. Nobody gets it. Nobody gets it.
Just kidding. I know the Jetsons. No,
but it is interesting because we had Alan Matheson on, who is over like the Draper Prison relocation, and he talked about that as well.
Like a pad or something. Yeah. Do they land? What's the deal?
I mean,
so how does it work?
So, I mean, it is still 2025 that it's out. Yeah. But yes, there would be areas where they can land. And so what I have inferred, and I mean, now I am speaking on behalf of Elizabeth McMillan, person who's interested in unmanned aerial travel, not the Department of Transportation nor the federal government. But yes, what I understand is that initially it would probably be things like picking people up from the airport and then taking them to a place in cities that are most populated first, take them to a pad, and then they would get from there to their homes.
Sweet.
We shall see.
I'm going to live just to see that, Stephanie. I don't care how old I am.
Take care of yourself.
Put me on an IV and put me on ice. I want to see that day.
Scott, no. He has hope. Yes. To live a long life.
Now I've got something to live for.
I hope it's in the Guinness World Records that the Silver Dollar Man.
There you go.
There's IV. Was the first person to travel.
That's it. I want to be the first man in Salt Lake to go up one of those things.
I will make
put me on that list.
I will put you on the list.
Yeah.
There you go. So I think that's going to be really cool when it happens.
Yeah.
And the reason that I think that that is so appealing, in addition to the Jetsons factor,
is. She didn't even know what the Jetsons are, but she says it. Thank you.
I'm going to send him a clip from something else where I've also referred to the Jetsons just so you feel good.
Yeah.
So there's that. But also, it gives us the opportunity to double deck without double decking. So you will have a highway in the sky where there can be other vehicles moving people without having cars on top of cars on top of cars.
Another sweet thing. Another sweet thing is, you know, I hiked across the Brooklyn Bridge. You know where that's at, Stephanie?
Scott, just because you feel like I'm not cultured.
Anyway.
I just gave him a dirty look.
That was cold. And
I know.
I deserved, I would say.
The Big Apple, okay? I've been on the Brooklyn Bridge.
So I was going to say, the Brooklyn Bridge, you know, you walk across the Brooklyn Bridge and you're above this. You're above the cars. Most people don't know that. Did you know that, Stephanie? Elizabeth, you can walk across the Brooklyn Bridge above the cars. So it allows for, you know, traffic both, you know, both by foot, bicycle, and on the cars. And it doesn't really take up any more room.
Exactly. And it's so much safer.
So much safer. Yeah. Yep. It was sweet. You got to try to do that one. I'll tell you what, Elizabeth, I will take you across the Brooklyn Bridge if you get me on that Jetsons, that little Jetson taxi.
Balanced, but yes, okay.
Okay, that's a deal. 2089.
There you go. Love it.
Right.
So I think that that's really exciting. And then connected autonomous vehicles, that is exciting too. So like self-driving cars is what most people call it. But I actually think that one of the things that's going to be the best about it is not so much them being autonomous and driving themselves, but the connected technology. So in the future, there would be a scenario upon which you're coming up to an icy bridge. And our bridge would be able to tell your car, you're coming up to an icy bridge, you should slow down a little. And so if you were driving, you would be able to slow down. If the car is autonomous, it would know to slow down. Vehicles would be able to communicate with each other so that they don't hit each other, so they know what speed to go. So they call it vehicle-to-everything communication. So infrastructure, cars, trucks, all talking to each other. It will be so much safer. I'm really excited
it will
about
be.
That. Traffic
and
will
you know,
move better.
The most dangerous accident I ever had in my life was driving across Nebraska, and I went across a bridge that was slightly elevated, and I didn't know that it was frozen. I totally lost control and went into a ditch and everything else. Miraculously, Stephanie. Miraculously.
To be on this podcast.
To be on this podcast.
For this moment right here.
Yeah, it's right
now. No, that is terrifying, though.
No, it is terrifying if you've ever had that done, but you don't see it.
Mm-mm.
You know, I mean, from your eyes, it looks just exactly like the rest of the road, and then all of a sudden, it's just like black ice across there. So it's pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
So that's pretty amazing.
Yep. So for safety and for traffic flow, that is going to be incredible. So those are the two, like, glamorous things.
Big things.
And the less glamorous things, but I think that will have a lot of impact, are just engaging with communities more. So one of the things that we've seen is that local governments, we haven't necessarily communicated with them as much as we should. So they have plans for growth. They know that they're growing. They have a certain personality that they want for their city. And if we are communicating with them along the way and we understand that, when we come in to build something, we know what they need. We know what they want it to look like. And that way we build something better for the people who are going to use it, and it will work better ultimately too. So just becoming better at that is something we've invested a lot of time and energy and money, frankly, into over the past, I would say, 8 years or so. And we're just continuing to do that more and more and more. And I think that'll make a big difference.
We just did an episode about, you know, that there's people that are like, not in my backyard, that they don't want more development. Do people feel that way about big roads, that they don't want them in their backyard?
They don't love big roads. Yeah, very much so. And that's part of why I say that we try to be conscientious about not widening more than we have to, not putting pavement where we don't have to. And there are communities that have been there for a long time, or even that haven't been there for a long time, but they've formed emotional bonds with each other. They've formed an identity. And so if you have a big road come in where a small one was before, or no road at all, it does change the way things feel. And that's just, that's a reality. So it is a lot of strong pushback when we put in a new road or widen something. And at the same time, I understand why. As a human, I understand that.
But is there anything that you like to share with people as you are on this platform of like, maybe encouragement of?
Yes. So there are a couple of things. So I was working at an engineering firm when I bought my home. It was my first home. I still live there now. One of the engineers that I worked with, though, said, before you buy that house, take a look at your city's master plan to see if any of the roads that are by you are going to be built out into bigger roads. Mm. So oftentimes that's what will happen, is that you'll have just a regular neighborhood surface street. But the plan is that it's going to become something much bigger, like a Bangor, or even just a very busy road.
Or a Redwood.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good example. So to take a look at your city's master plan before you decide where to live, because for the most parts, there is a long range plan that shows where those bigger roads are going to be. So I strongly recommend that people take a look at that. And not necessarily because you wouldn't buy the home, but because you'll know what's coming. You'll know approximately when it's going to be and what the feel of your neighborhood will be like later. So that is number one piece of advice. The other thing that I would just love for people to do is come to meetings. And so it's hard if you're seeing that we want people to come talk to us about a project that's going to be built in 30 years, because we are looking out 30, even 50 years. Like, you're going to be taking your first flight on an aerial taxi at that time.
My funeral is probably going to be the first one.
Yeah. It's just hard to get excited about having that conversation because a lot of times you're thinking, I'm not even going to live here by then. Or even if you are, it's so far out. It's hard to even wrap your mind around it. And at the same time, we use that feedback to inform what we do. So if we don't have people come and talk to us early on, then we're just doing the best that we can. And that might not end up being what's best for that community. So show up to public meetings. We're doing a lot of them online now. So you can join us virtually while you cook your dinner and listen and ask questions. But it's really important. The only way we can do what communities want us and need us to do is if we understand what they want and need. So tell us.
I feel like those are two great tips. I didn't realize with the master plan of wherever you're buying to go and look at the communities.
When you think about maybe housing that might go up around you, but you rarely think about the roads.
Yeah.
You know, what is going to happen down the road if you're planning on living there for a while.
Exactly.
You know what I found to be really interesting about this podcast and the information you've been giving us is that yesterday when I was sitting there, I wanted to I thought I was going to have to stick like pencils in my eyes as we were going through this podcast.
And you've only had to do it once. Yeah.
No, but I've really enjoyed this. This has been quite exciting. I mean, this has just been very interesting, don't you think, Stephanie?
Yeah, Scott always does that. And I'm like, well, what if I didn't think it was exciting? But I'm like, we've been recording, like we're nearing the end. And I'm like, wait, but I still have questions. So,
And Elizabeth is really knowledgeable.
She is, and she's fun.
She's a lot of fun.
I mean, I'll come back anytime.
Yeah, we'd love to have you. I'll tell all the good stuff. I think the thing that got me excited about transportation is my dad told me that when I was little, that him and my mom took me on a walk down like I-215 because it wasn't done. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want down there because like they dug it out. And to me, that boggles my mind that the east side of I-215 was not there. Like that, like to me just seems like, what in the world, you know? And so that's when I was really started being like, wow, like they planned so far ahead for just our belt route and just sort of seeing these things. So I want to be that person that's at that planning meeting for 50 years.
Yeah. I would really love for you to be there. We will hang out.
Like, that's my new community. But I think it's like fun to think of, okay, you know what? I love Utah and I love my community. If you don't speak up, who's being like
you got nobody to
your future self and your future people living here are going to thank you.
So. Exactly.
Can't complain when you don't voice your opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We do the best we can. And yeah, it's a lot better if we can hear directly from you. I'll also put in a plug for Envision Utah because coming to our meetings, that is really important for us. It's like very direct. And also just participating in any planning or visioning effort that's happening in Utah. We're really lucky to have people who are passionate about that as well, not just at UDOT, but at Envision, at GOED, at EDC Utah, in the governor's office. There are so many people working on that. And I believe Envision Utah is going to be looking at some renewed efforts. So anytime there's a chance to talk about what your community can, should, could be, show up.
Man, I just have all these extracurricular activities.
I know. Just, I think of some other assignments.
I'm going home right now and tell my wife we need to show up.
Scott's always saying he doesn't know what to do in Utah because he doesn't hike or
I'm just saying, you know,
public media.
That's it. I'm going to all the meetings now.
You can go and get his autograph.
The only other thing that I will say is that we have an app. And it's also available online called UDOT Click and Fix. And it is something that you can just log in and it's like you're creating a little work task order for us. So if you see a pothole, if you see a light that's out, you see anything that you think we should be taking care of, you can get in there and make a request. We'll get back to you, tell you when we're going to either close it out or that you can expect to hear back at whatever time. And then we'll let you know when it's done. I mean, we're all on the roads a lot. You see things and then it's just like, I wish that they would take care of that. Now you know.
What is it again?
Send us a message. It's UDOT Click and Fix.
UDOT Click and Fix. And I've got a project right now for them. My driveway. It's been
private land
limited to state roads,
but right, like
but you can submit it.
No, but I think that's really cool because if there is that thing that you're like, oh, this pothole's so annoying,
and some of those potholes seem, they get pretty big.
And to have that pothole filled because I submitted a request, I feel like that is like the best public service.
They're going to put that in my eulogy.
Like
he got the pothole filled.
End of life planning for you today, and I don't know what to take away from the contemplation of your death.
So,
it's like, this has been really fun. Now, I'm thinking about dying.
No. For some reason, when we got on the roads and projects, I was thinking, am I going to be here when that's around?
I love it. Elizabeth, we really appreciate you coming and taking the time to be, like, honestly, when you accepted, I was like, are you serious? Because I know, like, you have a really busy schedule, and, I mean, we plan this months out, and so I just appreciate you coming and talking to us and sharing with our listeners your knowledge.
This has been so fun. So, yes, emcmillan@utah.gov. If you have nerdy questions or requests, send them my way.
See, and she's so good at, like, podcasts and interviews.
She's right
she
there.
Knew.
Yeah.
You knew I
right
was
there.
The
boom. She already gives it. We didn't even have to ask.
So, voila. And, you know, I should also probably say udot.utah.gov. That is the official way to get in touch with us. But if you want to nerd out, I'm your girl.
Well, thanks for so much for helping us look forward to the future of the Beehive State.
It's Jetson land.
Just a plug for all you homeowners out there. Remember, you get to choose your title company.
And here at Title One, there's a reason why there's a one in our title. Learn all about our colossal closings
by going to askusutah.com.
We celebrate with you in securing a house for your home.